Right now, I'm absolutely delighted to introduce to you Dr. Audrey Nelson. She's written a book called Code Switching, How to Talk So Men Will Listen. When my producer, Lynn Sloan, and I got wind of this book, we both became very excited because we knew we could benefit from it. Let me tell you just a little bit about Audrey. She's an internationally recognized communication consultant and seminar leader. She's the head of Nelson Communication, a corporate communication company. She specializes in interpersonal skills, male-female communication, sexual harassment and discrimination, cultural diversity, and conflict management. And she joins us now on the Pat Thurston program. Audrey, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you're joining us from Colorado, aren't you?
I am.
I think that is just a noble thing for you to do, and I thank you very, very much for being here with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, let's start sort of from the beginning. First of all, I want you to identify the problem for us, why there's a difficulty of communicating between genders.
Well, men and women are different, and we believe different is good. We would not all want to be the same. But because men and women have different styles, ways, techniques of communicating, this can sometimes cause barriers. And if we have a knowledge of the differences, it helps pave the way to connecting and communicating more efficiently.
And are we talking about communicating better, communicating more effectively in the work environment exclusively, or also in our personal lives, in our lives away from work?
The book, Code Switching, How to Talk So Men Will Listen, co-authored with Claire Brown and myself. She is also a PhD in communication. That's a good question. We originally, our book proposal was for home and work.
Mm-hmm.
However, the publishers wanted us to focus on the work environment. We tell people that you can take everything in the book home with you. It's applicable to any context, whether you're dealing with the car mechanic, dropping your car off, your husband. I just had a client say to me, you know, Audrey, I took your pyramid style suggestion
mm-hmm.
home with me. It worked great with my husband. So you can apply it with your male coworkers, your male boss, the male vendor you deal with. And, you know, this applies also at home.
You know, I'm anxious to use some of the techniques that you have in the book. And I was thinking also of the pyramid style speaking. I'd like to start using those things with my interactions with my boss. I am in an industry that's a very male-dominated industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I do find that I am not a very effective communicator. And I don't like that. I want to be an effective communicator. Now, we've each mentioned the pyramid style speaking. Maybe you should explain to our listeners audience just what that is.
Oh, sure. We have over 50 code switching tips in the book. And this one really catches a lot of people's attention. People really like this.
Because it's simple.
I guess. You know, people really latch on to this one. The pyramid style refers to a way to interact with men verbally. Now, we have 20 chapters in the book on 20 different areas that we feel are critical for women in the workplace. This one, the pyramid style, comes out of our chapter that talks about linguistics, how men and women talk. And the pyramid style works like this. Men are very goal-oriented. And women tend to be more process-oriented. We want to tell you how and why we got there. We love to tell stories for many different reasons. It's a way of bonding, connecting. And for men, if you've ever heard the cliches, what's the bottom line, speak to the point, all of that was born out of male culture. So the pyramid style works like this. a man ask you a question. So he could hypothetically say, will I have those numbers by Friday? Now, that question could be answered in one word, yes or no. Instead, she begins her answer.
I can hear it now.
Right. Yeah, well, you won't believe what happened to me last week. I had two people out with H1N1. My car broke down on the 580. I had problems. The computers were down for a while. And this man still does not have his answer. And if you look at men, you can see nonverbally, as he's listening to this long, drawn-out story, he enters the trance. He just becomes glazed over, and he just wants that answer. So I tell women, the pyramid style is you answer in one word or one sentence, the small part at the top. No, I will not have those numbers for you by Friday.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple good reasons why. But I will have them for you on Monday. And here are the reasons. Then she can build the pyramid. She can also choose to stop there.
Right.
Because he may not be interested. Great, you can have them for me Monday. Great, have them noon on my desk. Or he may inquire, well, what happened? How come? Why not? Then she can build that pyramid and support it. That one word, one sentence answer.
So that as you communicate, you give a little bit more each time he asks for more information.
If he wants it. And right. I have to tell you, my guess is, from my experience, is 75% of the time he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Just tell me.
You know, I think everything that you say is true. And I do think that it's also true in at home. You know, I laughed when you mentioned the woman who said she would use it on her husband, because I know that I get that kind of response from my husband. I start giving these long answers and telling stories, and he actually would just say, stop. Just answer the question.
Right.
And I get angry about that, but maybe it's my problem. It's the way that I'm communicating, and I need to be more direct and answer his question.
And you just said a key word. So not only are men goal-oriented, but they're also very direct.
Yeah. And that's not always an insult. They just want to get to the point.
Exactly. So again, you know, different is good. We don't want everybody to be the same. And knowledge and understanding of those differences is what makes you a code switcher, better communicator.
One of the other things that you mentioned that caught my attention was attention beginnings, and especially
right.
because of the way you explain it, that it's sort of like, you know, what's coming up on the news. Tell us about attention beginnings and how women tend to use those.
You bet. Attention beginnings are a linguistic style, and I might add a footnote. Not only do women use them, this is a common speech pattern among children. Now, am I suggesting that women speak like children? Well, sometimes I think women do. And this came out of a whole study of linguistics, looking at different patterns of how women talk. And sometimes women feel they need to bait the listener.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to grab their attention. And they will say something like, here are illustrative examples of attention beginnings, you won't believe what happened to me today. You'll never guess what happened. So we do things. Or I had the worst day, or the best thing in the world happened. So it sparks the listener. I have to hook them
right
into listening. And again, let me just make another side footnote. When we talk about women have a tendency to do this, attention beginnings, men have a tendency to do this, they're more direct and more goal-oriented, we are not implying all women and all men. We are, I tell people to visualize a bell-shaped curve. We're talking about the fat part of that bell-shaped curve mm-hmm. where most people live. So when we say men have a tendency to, we mean most men, not all men.
Right.
So there's always exceptions and individual differences. You know, when I do training this or keynotes, people will come up, a woman will come up and she said, Audrey, the way you describe men, I've decided I'm a man. She said, I incorporate some more of the male style than the female style. And sure, of course, that happens. And I might add, that happens to people like you, Pat, and other women who are in male-dominated industries, like gas and oil, like brokerage firms, a lot of financial institutions, banking, etc., are dominated. Engineering is another big one, by men. And women who are immersed in those cultures, if you are in it 40 hours a week, you begin to assume some of the traits and some of the style. You begin speaking the language.
Well, you have to.
Yes.
In order to, and unfortunately, I have not assumed those styles sufficiently. And I know that I haven't, and it's one of the reasons that I really appreciate this book, because you do give all of these clues, which are quite specific, and show you things that you can do to better communicate with men in your work environment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many things that you mentioned that I do that I hadn't realized, and it kind of amuses me. The problem is it has reduced the effectiveness of my communicating, and that's the last thing I want. Audrey, I'm going to ask you to hold on for just a minute.
Sure.
We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we will take some calls from some of our listeners as well. 808-0810 is...
And the world is in their hands when you teach the children to jump the very best you can.
It's a shared equal opportunity. However, here is something that we do know from the publishing industry. And this is my second book. In my first book, Prentice Hall published, and the publishers said to me, and they told me something I already knew, 80% of the people that buy self-help, how to make it better, how to improve relationships, how to improve communication books, are women.
Hmm.
And this goes right to the heart of another gender difference. Women are in charge of social maintenance. They take care of people, relationships, and they buy the books. And we've known that for decades. So that's the market. And yes, men can learn from it. My first book was written for both men and women, but our publishers, Alpha Books, an imprint of Penguin, said, we want you to target women. And, of course, we had no problem with that, Claire and I, because that's been our work for the last 30 years. And, you know, we're women. We know. We've been there. We've lived it. We've experienced it. So, yes, indeed, we can all learn, men and women.
It seems as if, too, the women... And I could be saying this incorrectly, but I think out of your book that the direction is essentially not, is to communicate mostly with people who are in positions of authority, not necessarily with your coworkers.
You know, actually, it really is forever all men. And we don't just target interactions, you know, with your male supervisor, the
right.
boss, the CEO, the president. It really is your male coworker, and, you know, or the male vendor, or, you know, any men that you interface with in the workplace.
Okay, let's go ahead and get another phone call on here. 808-0810 is the number, 808-0810. Roger is calling from Alameda. Roger, hi, welcome to KGO. You're on with Audrey Nelson. Go ahead.
Hi, Pat. Hi, Audrey. I agree with about 100% of what I'm hearing Audrey say.
Just about that?
Yeah, just about 100%. Maybe 110. My wife, you know what she'll often do? I'll ask her a question, and she'll go on for 20 minutes with stories. I'm just like, please, just answer the question. And if she would answer the question and then tell the stories, I'd be a happy man because I'd have my answer. The other thing that happens from her end often is she'll say to me, after talking 25 minutes, you're not listening to me. You haven't heard anything I've said.
Right.
And I feel like, oh, my God, you've been doing nothing but talking. I've heard every word. I often feel like she's saying to me either one of two things. Either you're not giving me feedback or you're not agreeing with me. What does your guest think about that?
Well, I will tell you exactly what she's thinking. And in my own research of 1,000 men and women, this came up. And again, this was nothing new. The number one complaint that women have about men's listening, and in my study, I asked both men and women, what are men's greatest strengths and weaknesses in communication, and what are women's greatest strengths and weaknesses? And what I found in the study that was so interesting was that men had the same self-perception. Men are lousy listeners. Now, I make the argument in my first book, You Don't Say, is the name of that book. I make the argument that men do listen. They just listen differently, and they don't listen the way women would like them to listen. And what does that mean? So let me just dissect what's going on with you, Roger, when your wife tells those stories. She is telling those stories because it gets at the heart and her feelings. Also, her way of bonding and connecting to reaching out. Now, go to the second issue. She would feel that you're listening, and I know you were. And usually when you ask men, you know, what did she just say, men will categorize it, organize it. They'll even know, well, she just said three things. First, so they are listening. But the issue gets a little deeper than that. She wants an empathetic type of listening.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to know that she's been heard, and more important, that she's been understood. And empathy is a challenge, and it happens to be one of an arena where women tend to excel and men tend to struggle. And we even know that from all the emotional intelligence research. Women tend to be better at empathy. And let me give one more illustration and testimony to that, is that women are chosen more at work and at home for personal disclosure than men. So in other words, both men and women, if they have something of a personal nature, you know, oh, I just found out this weekend that my teenager is dealing drugs, something of a personal nature, she or he would prefer to tell her mm-hmm. than him. And people go, why are women the recipients of more personal disclosure? It's because, we believe, women are better at empathetic listening. And that means putting themselves in the other person's place.
Not so judgmental.
Feeling as they feel.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Like, you know, I can just see the scenario. You come home and she begins telling you all her stories. She wants you to feel her frustration at what she experienced at work today, or the excitement she had, and she wants you to respond that way. And I'm going to add one more caveat. Men tend to be goal-oriented also in their listening. They want to kill it and drag it back to the cave. So if you tell a woman tells a man her story, he's thinking, how can I fix this? I've got a problem, solve this. And I know in my house, what I hear from Jeffrey is, I don't know why you're telling me this. There's nothing I can do about it. And I tell them, you don't
have to do anything. Exactly. We just want to share.
We're sharing. What? You mean you just want me to sit here and, you know, some men say, what, she just wants me to be a bump on the log? I said, yes.
Exactly.
And if you're up for the, you know, up for it, she would also love it if you responded and said, wow, I bet that made you angry, huh?
Or at least don't roll your eyes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. There you go.
There are different kinds of responses that are acceptable, but rolling your eyes is not one of them.
Right.
Or using that little hand gesture that means, you know, speed it up while you get on with
absolutely.
It. That's not good.
Absolutely.
There's another thing. We were talking earlier about attention beginnings. There's another thing that you talk about that women do, tag questions, which, again, goes to the strength of what it is you're saying. It takes it away, weakens whatever it is you're saying. Tell us what tag questions are.
Tag question is really a polite form of communication. It is not all bad. But when I hear women in the workplace context say, how come I can't get anything done around here? If Sam asks people to do something, they jump and they do it. When I do it, I just can't get people to do. So here's how it goes. A tag question is a declarative sentence punctuated with a nonverbal and verbal element. So it's the declarative sentence, comma, then a question tagged on at the end,
mm-hmm.
and here's the nonverbal piece, and the pitch goes up.
Right.
And it sounds like this. I need the report today. Is that okay? I'll give another version. I need the report today. Can you do it?
It's almost like you're apologizing.
Well, exactly. Or like you're asking for permission.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a polite form in the sense that you're being solicitous of the other person. Is your day busy? Are you able to get to it?
Right.
You know, that part is the polite part. But if it's a no ifs, ands, or buts, gotta have it.
Right.
You know, I tell women, go home with this. Would you say to your young child, pick up your room, won't you please? No, I don't want to pick up my room. You say, get in there and pick up your room. So.
Is part of our problem that we're just polite? We want to be nice. We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
You just said something right there. We want to be nice, and we don't want to hurt people's feelings. Now, I am not suggesting that we need to hit people over the head. And code switching is really about blending styles into more of a synergistic approach to communication. So, you know, your communication style is everything. I just want women to become more self-conscious,
mm-hmm.
how they may be setting themselves up. So I could say, you know, a blending might be, you know, George, how busy is your day? How's your day going? I need this report by 5 p.m.
Right.
So I have incorporated him, which is a respectful and more democratic style, rather than walk in, George, I need this by 5 today.
Right, exactly.
Well, that's a little heavy-handed.
Right.
But I don't want to tag that question on at the end because it dilutes the imperative, you know, need and
your strength, the strength of who you are and what you need to have done.
That's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, you said something so key. The need to be liked and nice.
Right.
And women have, I do a keynote called the 12 A's to Acts, and it's designed for women's conferences. And two of the A's are a high need for approval and affiliation. We want to be liked. We want to be approved of. And we will sacrifice. We will say yes when we really mean no. And women really worry about being liked, and we have a whole chapter on how we do conflict. I do a keynote called Nice Girls Don't Do Conflict. So I tell women, you know, some times at work when we need to be assertive, just like at home, we're not going to be queen for a day.
Mm-hmm.
But particularly for women in leadership positions, you know, sometimes you have to enforce unpopular new company policies,
right,
rules, regulations. You have to discipline people, you know, et cetera. In those contexts, some people may not think you're being nice. Well, I'm doing my job.
Yeah, it's business.
I'm not here for a popularity contest.
Yes, and that's a very difficult thing to accept.
Huge.
I'm going to take another break, but one of the things we have to do, we don't have all that much time left, one of the things we have to do is talk about what I think is one of the toughest things I know for me, and I assume for a lot of women, and that is to ask for something for yourself, like for a raise or for a promotion. It's really difficult, and I don't know if it's centered around a fear of rejection or exactly what it is, but we go into those things, it seems like, apologizing for being there and trying to justify the raise or the promotion with things that have nothing to do with business. So let's talk about that when we come back.
Right.
Audrey Nelson is my guest. The book is called How to Talk So Men Will Listen. And by the way, this will be in our program summaries at KGOradio.com, and the book will also be on the KGO book. Talk So Men Will Listen. My guest is Audrey Nelson. She's a co-author of this book, and it really is fascinating. It has concrete things that women can do to more effectively communicate with men. Some of them are just phenomenal, and they're brief, and it's easy for you to grasp, to get hold of, and I have a feeling that if you read this book when you're sitting in a meeting at work with men the next time, you are going to incorporate some of these things, and you may well find that they work for you immediately. Audrey, what I said as we were going into the break was I wanted to talk about asking for things for yourself at work, like a raise or a promotion. I think it's one of the hardest things for women to do.
It is. I always say that request, trying to get somebody to do something for you, is a very highly assertive act. And women do interesting things. They develop interesting strategies around it. For example, they will lengthen the request as if to soften the request. Very similar to the tag question. And so a man might say, could you please close the door?
Mm-hmm.
A woman would say, you feel that draft in here? Did you say you were going to go down to the break room and, you know, grab a soda? Do you think, oh, never mind, you're probably too. Well, would it be all right if you closed the door behind? So we lengthen the request. And, again, you will often see in women's speaking style a demonstration of more deference.
Yes.
And that's a lot of what we do. So in certain contexts that you were referring to, like asking for a raise or it, you know, it can hamper your efforts. It does not come off as strong or solid, or you appear not as confident, so it erodes your credibility.
It seems as if a man wants a raise, believes that he should have a raise, wants a promotion, believes that he has earned a promotion, he just says it.
Yeah,
just very
absolutely.
Frankly. Are they not afraid of the rejection that I think we are so fearful of?
You know, I think there are many things that are going on. That certainly could be one of them. And we have a chapter on negotiation, and we've done studies, for example, that get at, you know, why do men make more money than women? Right now it's at about, women make about 78.9 cents to the dollar that men do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real simple thing. Men ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a sense of self-worth, or I always, you know, we know that women are good at being proponents and advocates for other people.
Yes.
Or, you know, listen to women talk. They'll talk about how great their children are,
mm-hmm.
how wonderful their husband is. But then when you ask them to represent themselves, that becomes another challenge. And, you know, we always try to tell women, ask, all they can do is say no. And also another piece is that men tend to be more risk takers.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, after we've had, you know, close to 5 decades of women entering the workforce now, that women are becoming more risky. They will jump out there, you know, the old saying, beg forgiveness rather than ask permission.
Mm-hmm.
But women always feel like they need to ask permission. And I think stepping up and saying, I'm worth this, and I need to be paid more. You know, I want a 20% increase in my salary is difficult. We have no problem doing that for others, but for
right.
ourselves, it's a challenge. Women tend to be more other-oriented. Men tend to be more self-oriented. They're good at representing. And here's the situation where women can learn from men. I've seen women get irritated. And I can't believe it. He does exactly what I do, and he's making more. Well, he asks for more.
Right. Right.
You can do it, too.
Yeah, a lot of this, what we're talking about, you mentioned earlier that these things begin in childhood. Audrey, I've got 6-year-old triplets. I have 2 girls and a boy. Is there something you can tell me about my rearing of my children that will help my girls to be more assertive and more effective communicators, not just with members of the opposite sex, but overall?
Yeah, just overall be good communicators. Boy, triplets, better you than me.
It's a lot of fun.
Imagine. I will say this, that actually the differences, what they learn, we talk about this famous study in the book, actually starts in the womb, if you can believe that, that both parents begin talking to the tummy differently after they find out the gender of the child.
Mm-hmm.
And that is fascinating. But the moment they're pulled out of the womb, it begins. And my recommendation is, for me in raising my son and daughter, I never wanted them to feel limited or that they were stuck in the gender box. I wanted them to be fully actualized human beings and not to think they could not do, be, or express themselves in a certain way simply because they were a boy or a girl. And in fact, in my household, we make fun of traditional sex roles a lot. Being the manly man, you know, being the femme fatale.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell parents what's important, and in your case, when you have different genders, children of different sexes, it's just important to be consistent and not give different messages to one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen parents, for example, oh, boys will be boys.
Right.
What does that mean? That means he can get away with murder.
Right, exactly.
He can break the rules. No. If he breaks the curfew rule, he gets the same punishment as his sister.
Audrey, I hear the music. It means that we are out of time. What a delight to talk with you. Again,
thank
I thank you for getting up at this ungodly hour of the morning. But the book is wonderful, and I hope everybody gets a copy of it.
Well, I would like your listeners to Google codeswitching.biz. And they can also Google Audrey Nelson if they'd like to.
And this is KGO San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland.
From ABC News, I'm Hillary Barsky. In past competition, she...